It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Las Vegas continues with its jazz vibes as LA-based jazz pianist, vocalist, educator, and composer, and recording artist John Prue performs at VIX Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, September 27th and 28th at 7 and 8:30. So for reservations, go to vixlasvegas.com for everything about John Prue, including all his albums. Go to John Prue, and that's spelled PRUELX.com, John Prue. And follow him on Instagram and Facebook. And John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ira. Great to be here.
Thank you. So I have to ask you, of course, I'm sure people do it all the time. It's Prue as in Sue, and both have X's and O's in them, and it's French-Canadian, right?
That's right, yeah. Prue, okay. P-R-O-U-L-X, but it's just like true, blue, same.
Yeah, exactly, pronunciation. So yes. You grew up, I think, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and you started, I understand it, on the Suzuki violin, which is so close to a piano. That's why you transitioned seamlessly to that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I started on Suzuki violin, and that was a great method because it's all by ear. And I think that's a great way to teach music because music is a language, and that's how we teach language, is by just repeating it, right? You don't teach a kid how to write first. You just repeat words. And so music is the same way. And so I thought that was a really great training. But I just loved the piano. I kept gravitating towards the piano because of all the chords and the orchestrations you can do, whereas the violin is the single note, line, you know. So it's more fun, I think, to play piano. You got rhythm, you have all this kind of stuff. So I started gravitating towards that, but I was picking up songs by ear, just like I was on violin, on piano, and that's kind of what transitioned me to piano. And so my mom switched me to piano lessons at age 5. And then I kind of left the violin in the dust. I don't even know how to play anymore.
Now you just drive a Suzuki rather than play it.
There you go, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you went to the piano, were you initially geared towards the jazz genre, or was it something else like honky-tonk or rock or classical or blues?
Well, I love jazz from an early age because my grandfather played jazz guitar and we would have jam sessions at our house. So I grew up listening to a lot of jazz music. But I also was growing up listening to a lot of folk music because my parents both played guitar and sang more folk music. So, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Gordon Lightfoot, and Carole King, all those great folk artists as well. So I had a real combination of jazz and folk. But in terms of piano lessons, my piano teacher had me doing a lot of boogie-woogie kinds of piano playing, you know, some Scott Joplin, some stride piano. And even though I was learning classical, I was really leaning towards jazz because I would take classical pieces and I would kind of jazz them up. I just liked to improvise. And I think maybe that's because I was started as an ear player first. And so I started kind of changing things. And she saw that in me and she said, okay, we'll start transitioning you into some more jazz pieces that were written out. But that's where like Boogie Woogie and Stride, and even a composer named Claude Bowling, who kind of took classical and jazz and kind of melded them together. So that was a nice introduction into jazz through classical.
I've never asked a guest before, and I've had many jazz musicians and singers on, but for some reason I have to ask you, what is your definition of jazz? What is it about jazz that makes it unique from other forms of music?
Well, I'd say improvisation is a key factor. Also, it's a musical language. So just like any kind of style of music, jazz has its own language. Mm. And that's always based on recordings, famous recordings. You know, whenever you hear musicians play vocabulary, we call it, right? It's based on recordings that we've listened to, just as if you were a pop artist and listened to a bunch of Taylor Swift, you would sound like Taylor Swift or that kind of style of music. So it's to me, jazz is about the language of jazz. And it's a huge language, right? There's bebop, there's avant-garde, there's the traditional kind of jazz. So there's all these different kind of dialects within the language of jazz. And I think that's what makes it unique.
It's also, too, that for whatever reason, the Great American Songbook is so much part of the jazz.
Yeah.
Film. And yet there's other things, too. For example, in your album, Say It, you feature a jazz version of Both Sides Now, which is interesting because I had a version of that. So jazz is very adaptable to various genres. But for some reason, the Great American Songbook is a big part of that. Do you have any favorites within that realm?
Within the Great American Songbook?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great composers. Jerome Kern's a favorite composer of mine. Cole Porter wrote a lot of great music. Irving Berlin, Rodgers and Hart. I love a lot of Rodgers and Hart songs. Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke. I love a lot of their tunes. It Could Happen to You and, you know, Like Someone in Love, all those. And I kind of gravitate towards those songs as well because I'm a big fan of Chet Baker, who was a trumpet player and vocalist, of course. And he played a lot of those songs. And a lot of artists did, really, played a lot of songs out of the Great American Songbook. But they put their own spin on them, right? Because if you listen to the original music from the shows, they were more in that kind of musical theater style. So jazz artists like Miles Davis and you know, Chet Baker and all these great musicians took that, those songs, because they're great songs, and just added more chord changes and hipped them up, so to speak. You know, so yeah, and it's all about the arrangement too. You know, you can take really any song, as hokey as you, as it can be. Even Miles Davis recorded that song, Put Your Little Foot Right Out. You know, put your little foot, put your little foot. Right. But he called it Fran Dance when he kind of rewrote it and made it a hip tune, you know, Bill Evans playing and everything. So I think there it's about the arrangement, but I think jazz, there's a harmonic element to jazz that makes it unique. When you hear jazz harmony, you know that's jazz, you know, because mm-hmm. it's not just triads or seventh chords. There's all these cool chord extensions and things like that. So I think that's what makes it unique as well.
But do you think, though, the reason I always go back to the Great American Songbook, the bones are so strong from
exactly.
that music style that you could do all kinds of things with it, with jazz.
Yeah, and they were also writing in a certain form as well. You know, we talk about like the AABA song form, the 32-bar song form came from a lot of those musical theater shows. And for the composers, it was kind of nice to have like a form to write to. It made it a lot easier to write songs because there's a lot of repetition as well. When you have an AABA song form, right, the A sections are pretty much identical and then the bridge is different. So it makes it, as a composer, easier, I think, to write those kind of songs as well because it's less material that they have to learn.
I know that you write and you perform and you teach. Mm-hmm. As well as record albums, and you have
yeah.
four. Maybe your fifth one should be taking hokey songs and putting jazz to it. What do you think?
There you go. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I'd like that. Maybe okay. maybe even you know, my daughter Maya is a budding musician now as well, and kind of coming up and playing a lot of Brazilian music. She plays guitar and sings, and I'm thinking, you know, she's a senior in high school. Maybe we should record an album before she goes away and explores life. So that's another idea for an
album. You look awfully young for a high school. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You were called a young Chet Baker by many. So I'm looking at you and I'm saying, wait a minute, he's got a daughter in high school. Okay.
Yeah, and a son too. He's 11.
And a son, okay.
Yeah.
That works out well. Now, do you influence them with their music at home? Because clearly you're a little bit on the road, but you teach a lot too, and you're recording.
Yeah.
So they see all those elements of you. And so does that influence them in terms of either choosing a music career or a particular style of music?
I don't know if it's necessarily choosing a career music because we didn't really force it on the kids or anything. My daughter just kind of gravitated towards it. But I do think growing up with music around you does influence you. I mean, my parents both play guitar. My grandfather played jazz guitar. So you can't help but be influenced by that kind of upbringing. But I've also, you know, sort of helped her with the realization about careers in music and what that takes and sort of wearing a lot of different hats and the challenges of that as well. And she's up for that and interested in a lot of different things, including film scoring and some other things that she's interested in as well. And actually, she's kind of hit me to more of the Brazilian stuff because I love Brazilian music, but I maybe do more on the bebop kind of end of things. So she's kind of discovered some of that on her own and some artists that she's hit me to that I wasn't even aware of. So it's a real musical back and forth, especially with my daughter, who's really exploring music and in particular Brazilian music.
Did you ever think one of your kids would expand your musical horizons?
No, but that's what's so cool about being a father, right? Or being a parent. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, a lot of musicians, particularly jazz musicians, a lot of them don't necessarily have formal training, but they're very talented. But you received a bachelor's degree in jazz piano performance. Mm-hmm. And you also have a master's degree in jazz vocal performance. So you've got that academic background. It's not something you did initially, but you went back to do as well. So what was it, what did you feel was the need for that? Because clearly you have that talent side and you have the academic side.
Yeah, well, I went back to school to get my master's degree in jazz vocal performance because I was teaching a lot at many universities around Los Angeles here as an adjunct teacher. And anybody that teaches as an adjunct professor knows how tricky that kind of work is. If you're not full-time, you know, not you don't get the benefits, your hours are kind of all over the place, you're driving from university to university to put things together. So I'm thinking, there's got to be an easier way to do this. And the easier way is to get more of a full-time position at a university. But I didn't have the credentials to do that because I didn't have the master's degree. So I went back to school, that was 2017, so not that long ago.
No.
Went back to school as probably the oldest grad student there and got my master's in jazz vocal performance with the hopes of getting a full-time teaching job at a university, which actually did not pan out. But in place of that, I was offered another job through an online piano teaching company, which I'm currently working for, called pianowithjohnny.com. And that's not me, Johnny. There's another Johnny May, who's a piano player. But that's been really cool because it's more online. I can do work from anywhere. You know, I'm just creating lessons and I do some recordings and things like that. So that's been really nice. And I don't know if a degree helped me get that job, but it's just nice to have in the resume anyway.
Sure. Mention the website again for people who are interested.
Yeah, it's called pianowithjohnny.com. It's a subscription-based piano teaching site. It's not a one-on-one kind of teaching site, but there's videos that you watch as a member. There's different PDFs that you have access to with different lessons. I do a weekly office hours for students, so Zoom, like we're having here, where they zoom in from all over the world and ask me questions about piano, and we have kind of a back and forth. It's a lot of fun, and that's kind of the one-on-one communication that I get with the students. But it's pretty cool. The YouTube subscription base is really big. So if you put out a video, you know, sometimes it'll go viral and stuff like that. It's kind of fun just to see the music reach a larger audience that, and in performing, I haven't been able to reach as many people that way. So that's pretty cool.
Well, also too, you don't have to worry about driving to the university or college and finding a parking spot too.
Yeah.
I would think the reason you went for your master's is not so much to finally get a pension or recognition as a full-time instructor. It's more for the parking spot.
The parking spot, exactly.
I mean, Southern California. I mean, there's you know, premium.
So, that's true. Maybe in New York even more so. But
yeah, exactly. You know, written is the term I was going to say, and perform. But you've written with many luminaries in the jazz world. Mm-hmm. If I had to force you to pick one or two that really stick in your brain as to the creative collaboration or just the joy of it all, who would those one or two be? Or if you want to do three, fine too.
Yeah, well, I'd say writing with Melissa Manchester was really a highlight for me because she is, as you know, amazing artist, writer, pianist, vocalist. She kind of does everything, and she's had a huge career and is still performing, and mm-hmm. she's actually in the musical Funny Girl right now. And so I started working for her as her piano player, and I gave her an album, and I said, you know, here's some original songs on here. It would be an honor to write with you sometime, not thinking that she would say yes. And then she goes, yeah, that'd be great. Let's write something. And I was surprised. Wow, that's great. So we got together and we came up with a song, and it's called Big Light, which is not really a jazz tune, but it has jazz harmony. Again, so this gets back to what is jazz. Jazz influenced, I would say. More of a kind of a gospel anthemic kind of a tune. Very positive message and everything. And so we wrote this song, and it went very well. And she wrote the lyrics, and I wrote the melody and the chords. And once we finished writing it, I said, great, well, should we shop this to somebody? And she goes, shop it? She goes, I want to record this. And I think, whoa. So then she ended up recording it on her, I think it was 20th album, I want to say.
And you have four ways to go. You have four, so you got to catch up.
Yeah, I got to catch up. That's a lot of albums to go. But the cool thing was that after we had talked about her recording it, then she was going to make this into a duets album. So she said, you know, I'm thinking of somebody who would sound really good singing this as a duet with me. I'm going to ask Al Jarreau. I said, Al Jarreau? No way. So she asked Al Jarreau, and he said, yeah, I'd love to. So I got to go to the studio and watch Melissa and Al record the song that we wrote together. And I mean, what an opportunity. It was one of those pinch me moments. That was a real highlight.
Did you do the fan thing and get a picture with Al?
I did. Yeah. I mean, you know, we had a group photo, but, he was so effervescent. His spirit is so infectious, and he, I really miss him, and too bad that he's gone, because he was such a gift to the world, his music and his joy for music. He was like a little kid in the studio, just very about the music, and just really, a joy to work with. So that was really a highlight. And then I'd say probably also, you know, I collaborate. I don't write lyrics. I collaborate with different lyricists. So I work with a couple different ones. There's a guy named Chan Berry, and we wrote a song for Nancy Wilson. We've written songs for other artists as well. And then there's another lyricist that I work with, K. Lawrence Dunham, and we've written many songs together as well. One was recorded by Mary Stallings. I don't know if you're familiar with Mary Stallings. Mm-hmm. She's a wonderful vocalist out of the Bay Area. Very underrated vocalist, but she's wonderful. And then Dina Martin actually recorded one of our songs as well, which is pretty cool, on her album Destination Moon. And that was with a full orchestra and everything too. So
that's the best way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. So anyway, it's those kind of highlights have been really great. And the collaborations, I really just enjoy the collaboration process of working with a lyricist, because sometimes they'll write something and you'll have to change something musically. And sometimes it's vice versa, right? You'll write something and the words don't quite fit. So they have to kind of adjust. So it's a real give and take, but ultimately you're serving the music and you're getting the best that you can get.
Before I talk to you about your upcoming performance at VIX Las Vegas, because I want to find out how you're thinking about doing what you're doing there. One other question about jazz vocals, which because you did get a degree, what is it that is different from a jazz vocal as opposed to, I guess, a rock vocal or any other kind of musical genre vocal? What is the difference within the vocal? Because I've listened to a lot of jazz singers over the years, and I can't give you a definition. And you may not even have a definition, but you have much more experience than most people in that realm. So what is it about jazz vocals that, because you studied it, that makes it unique? Or is there something particularly different about that vocal? This is too long of a question for us.
Yeah, no, that's okay. No, I think to me, jazz, the great jazz vocalists, it was almost as if they weren't singing to you, they were talking to you. So I think jazz vocals has a more conversational kind of a interpretation. So for example, if Shirley Horn was singing a ballad, you weren't really focused on her voice as much. She has a nice voice, but it was more about the story, you know, and even the way that she would phrase a lyric, it wasn't like she was singing it straight. She was singing it as if she was talking to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that's unique about jazz voice that you don't have in, for example, classical, where you're reading exactly, or even in pop music, where it might be more about the show of the song or something, right? The explosions in the background and the dancers or whatever, you know, and it could be about the lyric as well. But I think with jazz, because it's also the way that these songs were written, you mentioned the Great American Songbook, in a very kind of poetic way of writing that we don't write in that same way anymore. You know, you don't hear, you know, the lyrics of when Sinatra's singing "The Way You Look Tonight" or something like that, right? You hear like "Baby, baby, baby, I want you so bad" in pop songs or whatever. You know, it's like very like kind of just, it's a different kind of approach. And so I think in jazz singing, the lyrics are different, but also just from a technical standpoint, I think the tone is different that you hear in jazz singers, right? Sometimes it could be a darker tone. You know, if you listen to like Sarah Vaughan, for example, right? Or Johnny Hartman, in that very, you know, kind of, "The very thought of you makes my heart sing." It's different than a pop singer maybe would sing more like kind of in that nasal kind of place. Or when you listen to the way that some pop singers might pronounce certain words, they're different. You know, they say like "could," they'll say like "coid" or something like that. You know, you hear these different things in pop that you don't hear in jazz. So there's a ton of differences, but I think to me that the main ones are kind of the tone, the conversational element, and also the way that you can take a melody and you can improvise the melody. So you'll hear jazz singers do that, where as when I teach, I always say it's good to sing it the way it's written the first time to honor the composer, right? As a composer myself, I like to hear the melody, you know, played pretty much the way I wrote it the first time. It's, you take a lot of time writing all that out. But then the second time, it's nice to then, okay, now put your personal stamp on it. And I think jazz singers do that really well.
Do you think, you mentioned Sinatra, do you think singers, singing icons such as Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett, do you think, not necessarily with all of their songs, but with some of their songs, are in that vein of the jazz vocalist?
Absolutely, yeah. And even the way that they phrase, there's this kind of like lyrical kind of singing where they go over the bar line, you know, like, fly me to the moon, where it's like not in the pocket because it's kind of floating over. But then he'll go, you know, and let me play among the stars, which is like right in the pocket. So they kind of go back and forth between like that kind of lyrical floating kind of quality and that kind of in the pocket singing, mm-hmm. Which is really a cool thing. It's really nice to listen to because it's not so predictable. And you can kind of, I tend to base it on the lyrics when I'm doing it myself. Does this word feel like you want to hold it a little bit longer? Are you trying to emphasize this particular word? And that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely. Tony Bennett is another one. Great song interpreter and just an amazing career. Mm-hmm. Actually got to play at his daughter Antonia's wedding, which was really an honor. Got the thumbs up from Tony. That was pretty cool.
That was very cool indeed, yes. But Sinatra credits Mabel Mercer for the phrasing that he developed over the decade of his career. So
I could see that.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your upcoming appearance. As again, I mentioned, it's Friday and Saturday, this Friday and Saturday, September 27th and 28th at 7 and 8:30 at Vix Las Vegas. Have you thought about what you're going to be doing with?
I did. And I already sent the guys the PDFs and the whole thing because I've never played with these musicians before. So it's a real treat. And that's another unique thing about jazz is that you can show up with some music. And if you send it ahead of time, and because you don't usually have that much time to rehearse, but if they can read the music, you can sound like you've been playing together for a long time. And usually people say that. They say, well, how long have you guys been playing together? You say, tonight, actually.
Yeah, tonight is the first time.
So we have Steve Flora on bass and Pepe Morella on drums and Joe Lano on guitar. So all highly recommended. I'm really looking forward to playing with them. I just sent them the music ahead of time. It's going to be a lot of combination of standards. Some out of the Chet Baker songbook, some out of the Nat King Cole songbook, who's also a big influence of mine. Some original songs as well, and some blues, and some kind of surprises thrown in there as well. So it's going to be a great show. And trying to keep the sets similar both nights so we could get a second chance to nail these charts.
Right, because you're doing two sets a night, so
yeah,
that works out. You mentioned Nat King Cole. Isn't it amazing how you just mentioned certain names that we've talked about, not just Nat King Cole, but obviously Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, et cetera. And these names, Nancy Wilson was another one, that they're around long after they're not around.
Yeah.
In other words, their music lives on, their performances live on through not just recordings, but sometimes movies, television, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I guess you, when you have a singular talent, it just continues on into the future. Even if it's considered current.
Yeah, and with Nat King Cole specifically, he was one of my first influences because my grandfather played a lot of his tunes, Straight Up and Fly Right and all those great songs in Route 66. And kind of a full circle moment was when I got to play with his daughter, Natalie Cole, as one of her piano players for about 5 years because Josh Nelson, who's another amazing piano player here in Los Angeles, recommended me as one of his subs when he couldn't do it. One of the gigs. And so I did the audition with Natalie, and that was an awesome experience to be playing all these songs that I grew up listening to Nat, you know, sing. And here I am with Natalie, and that was a real treat to play in that band.
Did you share with her some of your background in terms of
I did, father? Yeah. And she appreciated that too, obviously, with her legacy. And the piano chair was a big chair to fill because, I mean, geez, her dad is Nat King Cole, you know, and there you are, and you have to live up to that standard. But it was a real joy to work with her, and the musicians in that band were really high caliber, so it was just a great experience.
How important is quality as an aspect of jazz? What I mean by that is, you just mentioned Nat King Cole, or I mentioned it, and then you talked about it, which is a great story, and I appreciate it. How important is the quality of the talent in jazz, because you can have jazz musicians and singers who are okay. But then you have similar to, I guess, in a way, if you think of Las Vegas, which you're going to be coming up to very shortly, you have musicians that are very good musicians that perform in lounges, for example, in small showrooms. But then you have musicians that are singular in their talent. And so they perform in a concert venue and they draw thousands of people, and sometimes residencies. So I guess the question is it the quality of the talent that draws, particularly jazz fans, that draw people to the musician and or singer?
I think a couple of things. I think I'd say for the jazz listener, the quality is very important because they know they've listened to a lot of great artists, so they have a certain standard of what it should sound like, or, you know. But then I think the average person maybe who doesn't know that much about jazz, it's more about perception. So like you mentioned, some musicians might be in a lounge and some might be on a big stage with thousands of people. Well, what's the difference between those two people? Well, sometimes nothing. Because sometimes that's what makes music, the music business, so interesting, is that one day you could be playing a bar mitzvah and the next day you're playing for 5,000 people.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. You say, well, why are they paying all this money to see this and they're not paying over here to see? Because it's all about the context, where they're seeing you. It's kind of like when Joshua Bell was playing in the New York subway, right? Do you remember hearing that story? And he's playing and people are walking by him, ignoring him and everything.
Yes.
And then now they're paying all this money to come see him at the House of Bull. You know, so it's like, wait, you don't belong here. What are you doing? But the cool thing was that one kid stopped and was mesmerized. And that just goes to show, like, kids know what good music is. There's no denying that.
So what you're telling me is John Prue will be at the Hollywood Bowl shortly.
That's what I'm putting out there in the world. We'll see if it happens.
I like it.
No,
I put
out there in the universe, positive thinking.
You know, I'm listening to your voice as we talk, and I see you as well, but listening to your voice, I could see you hosting, and maybe you do, and I just didn't know it, a regular jazz program on a radio station, even if there's not many people listening to radio anymore. It's more of a podcast, but I could just, your voice has that unique quality that I could see you hosting a jazz program, a radio program.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, when I was in Chicago, I was really interested in doing voiceover work. And so I took some classes in that, and more interested maybe in the character voice side of things. And I think that's because of the ear training that Suzuki provided and also jazz provides. There's a way of mimicking different voices and language, really, too, that lends itself to that. So thank you, man. I'll have to try that sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I let you go, what's your favorite song in the jazz world? And it may not be performed by you. And then what is your favorite jazz song? We have about a minute left.
That's a tough one. My favorite jazz song. I'd probably say one of my favorites is, because of the melody, the harmony, and also the lyric, is I'm Glad There Is You, which is one of my favorite songs because the message is so powerful and the chords are just beautiful. That's one of my favorite songs, I'd say. And then what was the second question?
And well, there was one was your favorite jazz song in general, not necessarily one that you perform. And the other one is favorite song that you perform.
Okay, so I'm Glad There Is You. I actually don't perform that often. So I'd say that's my favorite song that I don't perform as much. The favorite song that I perform more often, I'd say, that would be tough. That's a tough one.
I'm glad I left it for a tough one.
I know, this is hard because I do so many. You know, I love ballads. I'm a sucker for ballads. So I'd probably say, and I know it's a well-known song, but I just love singing it, is When I Fall in Love. Yeah, I just love playing it, love the way it feels in my voice, love the intervals, love the chords. Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been John Prue. He's performing at Vic's Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, September 27th, 28th at 7 and 8:30. And for reservations, go to vixlasvegas.com. For everything about John Prue, go to John Prue. And again, that's Proulx. com and follow him on Instagram and Facebook. And John, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Thanks. See you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, anything you want us to be.